Have you been looking for a Taekwondo podcast with qualified people who know what they're talking about, who help you keep up with everything going on in the Taekwondo world? Well, you found it. This is the Taekwondo Podcast. Taekwondo news, competitions and other events, training and sports science, keeping the fans, coaches and high-performance athletes up to date with the latest news and trends on Olympic Taekwondo. Let's do this. This is the Taekwondo Podcast. And here's your host, Cesar Valentin.
Hello and welcome to the Taekwondo Podcast. We're a podcast based out of Austria in the English language for everyone out there who likes Taekwondo. In this episode, we have an under and scripted episode with Diego Molina about strength and conditioning for Taekwondo. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Coach Cesar Valentin. This week with me is again Diego Molina. Hi, Diego. How are you?
Hello. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm amazing. And it's nice to be here with you again. And now talking about a different topic. We're talking about very specific Taekwondo strength and conditioning, and especially on some of the techniques. I asked you to be here today to talk about the front leg canceling, front leg chamber techniques, front leg techniques, and how to prepare for them.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. Again, it's an honor for me to be here and to talk with you. I always learn talking with you. And, well, I'm a listener of the podcast, and contribute somehow to the listener. For me, it's an honor.
Well, you're one of my first calls to do when we're talking about strength and conditioning for Taekwondo, because you are very experienced with all kinds of athletes and you've been following it from a technical side as a trainer, but also as a strength and conditioning coach and working with top athletes around the world, especially with the Brazilian national team, Taekwondo, para Taekwondo, with the current athletes from the national team. So you're the right person to talk about it. Front leg is so important these days, and how do we train them? What is the importance of the front leg on attacking, on canceling the attacks, and how do you go into training for those situations?
Well, that's a nice question. I think everyone who watch Taekwondo nowadays and train people knows that protecting your range with your front leg is one of the main points on your defensive system. In this sense, choking the leg, defend your range, your area with your leg, it's a main point of the fight, because you avoid like your opponent entering your range and scoring you. And I will talk a little bit about how to train this choking leg in a physical trainer perspective. Maybe we can talk a little more about the technique itself, but I like to expose a little bit of, as a physical trainer, how do I see this phenomenon, and how do I train, how I prepare the muscle of my athlete, how do I prepare, what are the principles to keep this choking stronger, to avoid any kind of disbalance, for example. And I will talk a little bit about this. Do you want for me to enter already on the philosophy of the training, or do you want to do any commentary?
Well, basically, the front leg, it's used not only for roundhouse fast kicks, but mostly these days for a chop, for very strong cut kicks, a push kick on a sideways position, like a very strong push kick that looks like a Yopchage, but it's not a Yopchage. It's basically a very strong push kick. But at the same time, the same position also to cancel the simultaneously attacks from the opponent. If the attack attacks you with, if the opponent attacks you with a sharp kick, you use your front leg to deflect that attack. So the importance of the front leg kicking, and as you mentioned, from a strength and conditioning part, it's not only how good you are, flexibility, the range of motion with the front leg and how fast you are, but also how strong and how stable you are with the standing leg. And I think those are the two components that need to be worked. I have, of course, some tools in my toolbox to do it, but we're here to interview you. And what do you think about working with those?
Well, we discussed a little bit during the program. Well, I always say, independent on the movement, for example, it can be a punch or a kick or a chopping leg. When I want to improve this transference, so what I call the transference, imagine that, for example, I squat with two times my body weight, for example. The point is not how much I squat, but how can I transfer this strength for the movement itself? Like our goal in a strength and conditioning program for Taekwondo, it's not necessarily do my athlete squat with more weight, but to have a stronger kick or a faster kick or holding like the intensity of the kick during all the fight. Like these are our main objectives. And when we think about transfer your power, your strength to the specific movement, I always think about what are the main points of this movement, mainly the mechanical points, or what kind of capacity or movement influence directly in the performance of that movement during the fight. And then I start to approach each one of them. So for example, for the choking leg, I have 5 points that I think are the influence more your performance during the choking leg. It will influence for you to have a good or a bad choking leg. So first of all, is the strength of your leg, your base leg, for example, your leg that's
standing leg. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, your standing leg. The strength of your stretching leg. It's a key point because otherwise you will not have balance. You will chop the leg and you go down, for example. The strength on your attack leg, your front leg. This is a main point, especially a more specific resistance for the abductor, for example. The third point is flexibility and mobility. It's not a secret. Nowadays, mobility, especially and flexibility, are key points for the Taekwondo. If you don't have a good range of movement, it will be difficult because the point is not just the choking leg, but you must choking, and after it's necessary to do another action, for example. So it's very common, chop the leg, and then after you do a kick on the face, for example. If you don't have a good mobility, you have more difficulty to do this kind of movement. The fourth point is the core. As many people sometimes
they forget that the core stability, of course. Yes.
Yeah, they forget, but because in many times you put your trunk, for example, down, and if you don't have a good stability in your trunk to hold this position, to put your hip up front and your trunk a little more down, for example, if you don't have a good stability on the core, probably you have difficulty with your balance. Even if your leg has a good strength, even if you have a good mobility, if you don't have a strong core, the probability is that if you take a guy that's a little stronger, you have difficulty with your balance. And the last one, it's balance, but not just the balance and proprioception, but the capacity of decelerating with your base leg. For example, sometimes you have this adjustment that are not planned, for example, because you're receiving another weight, you're receiving another force, and you must absorb this with your leg, your base leg. So have trained this ability of absorbing, decelerating with your base leg is a key point to have a good choking leg. So these are the 5 points that I think are key points and that must be somehow in a strength and conditioning program for a Taekwondo player. And in general, sometimes people ask me in Instagram, for example, what's the best exercise for something? I don't know. What's the best exercise to improve my punch? Or in this case, what's the best exercise to improve my choking leg? When we think about key points, for example, we understand what influenced the performance on that movement, for example. We think in differentiate athletes, for example. Sometimes you can have an athlete that should improve more his strength, especially the strength in his base leg. Or you have another athlete, for example, that his limitation is the mobility. So this athlete, maybe if you want to improve the trotting leg, maybe you should focus a little more on the mobility. So that's why I like to put these items, these key points, because this helps me to organize the training for the athletes and sometimes individualize based on the necessity of each athlete. And this helps us as coaches to see each athlete and think a little bit, what's the need of this athlete? What's his need, real necessity? What's his strength or weakness in this sense? I don't know what you think about this line of thinking.
I think that talking about key points is important. Points like deceleration, definitely very interesting. And as you mentioned, understanding the needs of the athlete and the limitations of the athlete to define identify the best procedures to work on those key points. So I think we should go basically on the assessment. So what do you assess first when you look at the athletes?
Okay. When you see assess, is like to evaluate the athlete?
Yes, the evaluations. Or? Yeah, evaluations.
Oh, okay. To evaluate the athlete. Well, we have like first our general observation during the championship itself. That's one point. But like we have like general tests too that helps us to identify some things. So for example, in strength, like we have like a maximum strength test. We have like power tests. We have sometimes unilateral powers. I like unilateral power tests. For example, unilateral horizontal jump. For example, when we see like this difference between the legs, because the idea is not just the athlete generate power, but he needs to generate power in just one leg during the fight. So I think it's important to evaluate the athlete in this sense. We have some evaluates about mobility, but to be fairly honest, I don't usually use any kind of evaluation for the flexibility. I see as a subjective analysis itself, but I know that we have some objective evaluations for the for the flexibility itself, and for the balance, like we have like the, I forget the name in English, that it's like a triangle that then you
you're talking about the white test.
Yeah, the white test. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you have an objective test, you can use this. But I think in this case, when you're thinking movements and what we should improve, I think it's important to the subjective perception of the coach during the fight or during the exercise to identify. I think this is, it's not something objective, of course.
Do you use systems like the FMS assessment, the functional movement, and things like that?
For my athletes, don't. In the Olympic Committee, we use. I think I like, to be fairly honest, I like FMS because you can anticipate some risk of injuries. For example, the guy had limitation on the mobility of his.
Yes, of the ankle, the shoulder. Side. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I honestly think that's a very good test, especially to avoid injuries. Because the results of the test gives you direction for your training. So, you should improve the mobility for this or that articulation. So I think it's a very useful test, to be fairly honest. I use the
FMS test with the modified version now, not only the 21 points but also with the new ankle mobility test. That's the newest variation of the FMS original test battery, because on injury prevention and injury prophylaxis, I think it's important, especially in taekwondo, to have the big joints and the definitely ankle mobility and ankle stiffness are for taekwondo very important, and for force and speed production, but also for stability. And of course, we are a sport that is famous for producing power at the very big and wide range of motions. So FMS will definitely look at the symmetries and look at the mobility and stability issues. And yes, it is something I use with my players. I use with every player as moment as they join the high performance team. And then I do in the beginning of every season for injury prevention and to see if there's any symmetries that are easy to identify with that test. The test is not too long. It's easy to be done. It's not a test that is invasive. So I like it. Of course, there's many other assessments and many other tests that we do, but FMS is one of those easy ones to do.
Well, to improve the strength of the base leg, I always indicate a good progression. So it's obvious that it's important to do unilateral exercise, as for example, pistol, for example, or something like this. But it's important to do a progression from the bilateral exercise, strength exercise, to unilateral strength exercise, and then to do exercise that are more similar with the movement. So, for example, I would do a step up and do a kick, for example, a todo chagi, holding a weight, for example. I can do a step up doing a kick, but with a resistance, with a weight. Then if you have this progression of starting teaching the athlete how to squat and then improving the loads and then teaching the unilateral exercise of strength, general strength, but unilateral exercise. And then you start to implement exercise of strength that are unilateral, but they are more similar to the kicks, or even, for example, in this case, we are talking with the chopping leg, you can do a step up holding a weight, for example, and doing a chopping leg, for example, it's possible to do this. But the most important for me is the concept from the general to the specific, a progression to teach the athlete how to do strength with both legs in a more stable environment, and then improving this three unilateral exercise where he must do the strength but balance but has a balance in just one leg, and then imitate the movement, the technique of the kick, doing a strength exercise but in a more specific way. That's a progression that I usually do when I think in straightening the base leg of my athletes. I don't know what you think about it.
I agree with you, and there's all kinds of step up and unilateral movements. For example, I do a lot of these Ferko-Shankis progressions where you do the drop squats and then you move into directional movements. And instead of just doing a front or a side step, you just incorporate a shop kick on the drop squat. So basically you use all the Ferko-Shankis methods, but then you adapt them to what taekwondo specific movements would look like, because we are not runners. We don't need to sprint and have only vertical and horizontal plane motions with running, but to just replace the kick start from a running position to a taekwondo kick, and it can be done with front legs, shop kicks, and side kicks, whatever you want to do it. So the transfer to the sport specific movement is, as we all know, it has a better neuromuscular adaptation for the sport, and it makes, of course, the intermuscular and intramuscular coordination much more efficient.
Oh, I fully agree. And well, that's the first point, the first key point. The second key point is on the strength of the front leg. And here I have a progression too that starts strengthening with general exercise of local resistance strengthening exercise, especially for abductors. And then we can do a progression, like you can start strengthening with general exercise. And then I like to use progressions to transfer for the specific movements. And then we can use this logic even for kicks, that to do two kicks with the same leg, or for the chalk, that's our main point here. But like I enjoy to start movements in the floor. So for example, imagine that you're in a position similar to a lateral plank, for something like this. And then you do specific movements with the front leg. Why I think it's important, this kind of exercise? Because we can focus just on the front leg, on the attack leg, and in the movement of this attack without the problem of the mobility or the flexibility or the balance. Because sometimes if you go for the movement, complete movement, for example, stand up and then you do the movement, sometimes the balance is the difficult or sometimes the flexibility is difficult. When we put the athletes on the floor and we focus on the front leg, we are focused just on the front leg, on the attack, and then we can create exercise to improve especially the resistance of the strength in this kind of position. Or maybe if you want to do any kind of technical adjustment, it's a nice strategy to improve some technical adjustment in this position. But from the physical perspective, I like to do this progression of general exercise to abduction, and then this plank's position, lateral plank's position, and do some specific movements, sometimes with bands, or if you want to do some kind of isometric work, you can use some weights too. And then in this progression, in this sense, I like to use exercise stand up, but the athlete with the hand on the wall, for example, mm-hmm. because now you have the element of flexibility, but like we don't have like the problem of stability yet. So it's like another step, you know? So in the floor, we are in a step low, and now in the stand up, but with holding the wall, we're in a step further. And then I enjoy, for example, we were talking before the podcast, and then you show some work that you do, for example, doing weight, putting a weight, for example, before the knee of the person, of course, to not force the articulation of the knee, and then do some kinds of abduction, for example, and then transfer for the specific movement. We can use the same idea for the choking leg. And then we have different strategies here. We can do as with weight, as you were showing me before the program. We can do with bands. We can do even with a resistance of the partner. So, for example, the partner came with a pedal, for example, and then you put the pedal more or less in the knee high of the person, and then the person do that choking leg and hold a little bit. This part of holding a little bit for the choking leg, it's important because the choking is not like the kick, for example. The kick is faster, you know. The choking leg is like you are holding and then pushing the leg of the person. So it's not so fast like this. When I prepare my athletes for the choking leg, I always in the touch of the pedal or something like this, I like to do like a kind of isometry, you know? So I think it's a quite important part for the technique. And in the strength training, the strengthening exercise that we do, this part must be done. So I use basically these three variations with the hands on the wall. So with weight, free weight before the knee, with bands, and then sometimes bend that you put.
And the mini loop bands, yes.
Yeah. And with the partner holding the pedal, and then you can use like the resistance of the partner to do this kind of exercise. So I use these three kinds of variation. And then the last step is like a training with bands and in a more specific environment, like a stand up and then in movement as a fight, so you can transfer, like doing this kind with band, for example, doing this abduction like a choking leg, and then without the bands, and then you transfer like choking leg, and after you give a kick on the head or something like this. So that's basically the progression that I usually do, focus on the front leg to strengthening the front leg and transfer this for the specific movement. I don't know what you think about this progression, these strategies, and if you do something different.
I do the viewers, for the ones who are listening, and we talked before about a complex exercise where you work on the same drill with a loaded leg. In this case, we had some free weights hanging on the top side of the leg, so that when they would actually keep it isometric or even dynamic and do some repetitions with a loaded leg, and then immediately remove the weight and do the kicks on the pedal with the same or similar motion without any weights. But that's the very specific and very high degree of progression. The beginning, I would just say we start teaching the beginners with some Copenhagen planks where they're working on their adductors and static or even dynamic, doing plank bridges on the Copenhagen, and then progress that to basically stay on the side plank on the floor and try to kick the pedals and making it more dynamic, making it even fun and engaging. You can even do it with the kids. It's very exhausting, and it's a very good way of training adduction and abduction. And then you have the variations with the bands, even loop bands or even the long bands. Again, you have on the standing leg, and most people put the bands on the big long bands, elastic bands on the kicking leg, and I keep saying it's on the standing bag. It's important for the stability and for the strengthening of the standing leg. And it's all about making the training fun, engaging, and that the strength training as close as possible to the sport specific movement. And the progressions are, well, they are the same. They can be more creative, they can be less creative. They come to do with the athletes that you have, with the equipment you have, the space that you have. But loop bands, they are relatively cheap. And weights, it can be as simple as you said, as the pads. We do a lot of those isometric combinations on a standing position where you are using the kick shield to hold the leg, simulating a little bit what it would be if the opponent's leg was on top of yours and you're trying to cancel it. It's not a dynamic motion, it's an isometric motion. You're not moving, you're actually doing an effort without having any motion, and then release the pad and give it as a target. Those are situations that are very sport specific and very cheap. Everybody can do it, and if you don't have the pads, you can just use your hands to all push down the leg of your partner. And those are very important on the abduction of the kicking leg, but also very important on the adduction of the standing leg. So it's not about being using the highest and most technological developed equipment. It's about being scientifically correct and approved and using the resources that you have to do the progressions and staying on the floor, doing the easy stable progressions from the leg on the hand on the wall, and then motions on a standing up motions. That's, in my perspective, that's the reason why I invited you, because you are good.
Well, thank you very much. You see that we talk a lot of progressions. I think it's important for us to emphasize here, because I don't know in other place, but at least in Brazil, I see that we have a culture of copying exercise. So we have many exercises on Instagram and on YouTube, and like people see some fancy movements, some fancy exercise, and then they copy, and like they don't think if that exercise, it's feasible for him, it fits for his team, it fits for that athlete that he's working. So thinking always in progression, it's a good way to individualize your training. That's why we don't have like the best training that fits for everyone. Otherwise, we could hire a good coach or prescribe a training for 1 year, and then everybody in the world do the same training. You know, that doesn't exist, because people are different, and a good professional can understand the needs of the athletes and adjust and select the best exercise for that athlete and for that progression. That's why I always get a little mad when people ask, oh, what's the best exercise for this? Or people start to just copy and paste some exercise that they see on Instagram without thinking about it. So I think the most important is like progression, understand who is your athlete and how you develop for more complex exercise, where you want to go for him to go, and how do you do this road, you know?
The newest tool out there for Taekwondo Studios is the 2020 Armor Scoring System. 2020 Armor was founded in 2016 with the mission to enhance the way martial artists train, compete, and engage with the sport through the development of innovative products. The sports technology company has developed martial arts scoring equipment and software, transforming martial arts into a mainstream professional sport like soccer. The company's flagship product tracks impacts through a vest and headgear that shows the score on the vest itself using scoring from popular video games. Customers include the most prominent martial art clubs in the world. The founders and investors of 2020 Armor are former professional martial art athletes. IEAD Sports, founded by the family members of Adidas, is a significant investor. 2020 Armor's mission is to inspire people to fall in love with martial arts. Through the development of the UBL, the United Battle League, and 2020 Armor, the plan is to bridge the tech gap some combat sports are being made to face. Step up your game with 2020 Armor.
This podcast is supported by Hawken Dynamics. Hawken Dynamics believes that technology is most useful when it stays out of your way. That's why Hawken developed the world's first wireless force plate system with extreme usability. It is the quickest, easiest to use, and most robust solution on the market. It is trusted by all sports organizations, large and small, as well as tactical, military, and rehabilitation environments around the globe. It's force testing in the palm of your hand. Here at Vintaekwondo Center, we use Hawken Dynamics to test and monitor our team. The cloud-based platform allows us to access data and publish a variety of reports on the go. My favorites are trend reports and, of course, weight reports, where I can monitor different metrics to view progress and identify performance indicators, or to compare weights to a baseline data range. I use it on a daily basis to identify readiness. A simple jumping test takes me less than a minute to assess the entire team. Having my own Hawken Dynamics force plates allows me to test reactive strengths, maximum strengths, rate of force development, asymmetry, and so much more. The real-time feedback on the app is useful not only for testing, but as a training tool, making it more accurate and at the same time more engaging for the athletes. If you are interested in learning more about Hawken Dynamics or getting your own, the team can be reached at info@hawkendynamics.com or on Instagram or Twitter at Hawken Dynamics.
This podcast is sponsored by First Beat Sports. First Beat Sports combines the most comprehensive analytics in team sports with a customizable interface to support real-time monitoring, recovery monitoring, performance management, and much more. The result? Data-driven decisions that support your athletes and team training, recovery, and performance goals. First Beat Sports is trusted by professionals. Over 23,000 athletes representing over 1,000 teams around the world rely on the solution to train and plan with confidence on a team and individual level using HRV-based insights. For more information, please visit our website, firstbeat.com/sports.
When talking about Taekwondo training, we need to talk about Athlete Analyzer. Athlete Analyzer is the first Taekwondo-specific athlete monitoring system. It is used by both national teams, regional squads, and small clubs to maximize performance, prevent injuries, and communicate with both athletes and trainer teams. Athlete Analyzer is a cloud-based system with a friendly smartphone app. You can plan and monitor every aspect of your training, even when you are not in the gym with your team. The easy-to-use video analysis tool is not like anything you've seen. It helps you understand your athletes and even their opponents, making this app the only tool you need to manage your team. Before I used Athlete Analyzer, I spent an absurd amount of time in front of the computer, creating spreadsheets and using half a dozen software solutions. I have athletes in my center, but also abroad, and with Athlete Analyzer, it's much easier to communicate, plan, and monitor their development. Now that I have extra time, I can focus on what matters, training my athletes, and it still leaves me some room to do other stuff, like this Taekwondo podcast. Athlete Analyzer offers you a 2 weeks free trial. Visit them at athleteanalyzer.com to sign up, or click on the link in the episode's description.
To get the most of your free trial, I recommend you first book a free personal demonstration with Niklas. It will give you a great insight of what Athlete Analyzer has to offer you and your team. It is well worth the time.
You're listening to the Taekwondo Podcast. Now, back to your host, Cesar Valentin.
There is not one size fits all approach on sports, and definitely using Instagram as a way sometimes to get some ideas or for some exercises, you have to also be very careful to decide if the exercise is even useful or even correct and safe for the player to do it. Because some of the exercises on Instagram, sometimes you feel like it's someone pranking the other ones who like to copy. At least I hope so, because they're totally unsafe, useless, and some of them are just there for to basically prank the people. But it can be a source of ideas, and you know if to understand why they're doing it, good. But you always have to understand who's the audience of that exercise, to whom will you apply those exercises, and again, how did you get there? What's the progression? What's the for every exercise, especially for every new exercise I give to my players, and I give them 3 degrees of progression for even for the same exercise. There is the difficulty levels, like you can be as easy as a single leg gluteus bridge. You can give them a very stable position, a very hard position where you recruit more of your hamstring by just having the heel on the floor, doing it on an unstable platform. The angle, if it's a 90-20, how are you going to do it? So even the same exercise for different approaches on the different parts of the muscle, if you wanted a more medial or a more proximal or a more distal approach on the strength and conditioning, using that same exercise, it's also how do you get there and to whom does it apply. If I don't have the core stability, it makes sense to do it on an unstable platform. It's probably dangerous and creating asymmetries and injuries somewhere else. So definitely a good topic there, the progressions. Another topic would be copying social media and what social media brings, but it's okay. It's we have a lot of episodes ahead of us, and this let's focus on the cut kick and the front leg progressions. So third key point for you?
So it's mobility and flexibility. First of all, it's important to differentiate a little bit mobility and flexibility. Mobility is more related like to this, I don't know if the name in English, it will be the space in the articulation between the...
It's correct. Mobility. Yeah. Mobility is it's a matter of movement in the hips or, sorry, on the joints. Yeah. On the joints, and flexibility has to do with the soft tissue and muscle
lengthening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's quite important, because, for example, I like to do mobility exercise before the trainings that I do, but not flexibility. This is important, because when you don't differentiate things, you can make some kinds of mistake that can impact your training. So when we're talking mobility, we usually do dynamic exercise that the main goal is to improve like this range of movement in a more dynamic way. So we have like many exercises of mobility of hip. Then the listener can just put on YouTube on Instagram mobility hip exercise. You'll see like many variations. I use some of them. It depends on the kind of work that I will do during the training session. So for example, if I will do a strength training in the gym, for example, the guys will squat, I usually focus on mobility exercise that I think that will be good for them to squat. Or if I will do a technical training, then maybe I will use some other exercise of mobility. But in general, I always put some kind of mobility exercise. I have some protocols for the athletes before the technical training or before the strength training. I think it's quite important. But I never use flexibility before the training. And why is that? When we talk about flexibility, we have like many methods of flexibility. We have like passive, active, or FN.
Neuroproprioceptive facilitation.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I usually with Portuguese and I, what's the name in English? Sometimes in specific names, we have like this problem. And We know that when you do a flexibility training, and when I talk about flexibility training, it's not just like that stretching, you know, just...
It's increasing range of motion, especially on the muscular level, yes.
Yeah. And when this happens, we lose the capacity of generating strength. So that's a problem. If you do
Yes, for most people that don't understand that if you stretch too much, you're weakening your muscles, and it's studies said it's about 10% of maximum strength that you lose. And if you lose strength in the muscle, it will create a bigger chance of injuries during the training.
Yeah, exactly. So you have two main problems, in my opinion. The first of all is what you said, you increase your risk of injury, especially, for example, your hamstring, some muscle that usually do some eccentric activation, especially for protect your joint during a kick, for example. If you lose the capacity of generating strength in this muscle, the chance of injury increase a lot. So that's the first point. And the second point, if you want to increase the power in your kick or to increase the quality in anything, if you lose the capacity of generating strength before the training, we are losing the quality of the training, you know? So I don't flexibility exercise before the training. So I usually do or after the training, when the training are not so intense, don't generate so fatigue, or I try to put in another time. So I usually do I differentiate these two things, mobility and flexibility. So mobility I usually do before the training, before almost every training, I do some mobility exercise. And when I talk mobility training, it's not 20 minutes doing mobility, but I always put some exercise before the training that will help even to prepare it for the training itself. And I have this kind of strategy of flexibility training, but attending to where it's the best moment to put the strain. I don't know what's your opinion, Chun.
Usually I don't do flexibility trainings in the normal training. I have extra training sessions just for flexibility. Mm-hmm. The same with mobility. I have extra units for mobility, but there is always mobility before every training, because mobility is important. As we know, the joints and the fluid that goes through the joints and the fluid, it's a Newtonian properties fluid, so it needs to be worked under pressure, so it becomes more fluid, so that it becomes more mm-hmm. viscous and more, and helps the joints move more freely, and to prevent again and injuries on the joints. So mobility for sure. I start. I use a very out of the book warm up protocols. I use the ramps, or you raise your heart rate, you activate, you potentiate, and then. So you mobilize and then you potentiate. And sometimes, even though the mobilization in a very hard and strenuous training will come after the activation, in most of the trainings, mobility comes first. I just tell my players, go inside, do your mobility that you need, because each one has some asymmetries and some joints that need different mobility. So I let everyone do their own mobility protocols that they already have from me and from experience. And then we start the training. So mobility can, even fascial release can be done before the training, some mobility, and then I start with the training, and then I proceed with raising heart rate and usually games mm-hmm. or something that will activate them as well, so that they brings their focus into the sport. So there's a lot of literature out there, and I think that our listeners can always take note of RAMP. It's a very good protocol: raising heart rate, activate, mobilize, and potentiate, and then you start with the technical training. On the strength and conditioning, peer-specific strength training, I will mobilize the joints that will be engaged in that kind of training. And I'm not a fan of leg day and upper body day. There is always a mix, but of course there's mm-hmm. some days more specific to push and days more specific to to resistance or to maximum strength, and the plyometrics, and of course the mobility and the warming up of the joints involved in the movement are specific to the training that comes ahead. That's how I see it.
Nice. So I fully agree. Nice strategy for warm up. Well, the fourth point is the core. So strengthening the core, I think it's quite important. And then we have many progressions. But one thing that I like to emphasize, sometimes people think in strengthening the core just with isometric exercise. And it's important to have variations and a progression, of course, to start with isometric exercise, but do some core exercise with dynamic movements too. Because during the fight, when you need your strength in the core, you are in the dynamic movement. So it's important, of course. I prescribe many exercises that are isometric, but it's important to have dynamic movements too during the core. And when we think about the chopping leg, it's quite important variations of lateral plank. And as you said, for example, Copenhagen plank or plank that you do like abduction, for example, unilateral, and you do an abduction with the front leg. Of course, that's a more advanced plank, but it's important to do this kind of variation or a lateral plank with rotational of the trunk, for example. So I always put this kind of exercise. I train core almost every training. I have like at least 5 minutes of core training. It's not something that holds so much time during my training, but as every day I work like 5 minutes, if you take like during a week, if the guy trained 5 minutes of core every day, like, so it's half of hour in a week. So the total amount, it's good. And I think it makes some difference, you know.
I agree with you. And one of my favorite authors, Stuart McGill, a Canadian doctor who develops a lot on back and core strengthening. The big three, the McGill big three, are something that even my white belts learn. It's something that they it takes just a few seconds to do, a few minutes every day. Just go on the McGill big three, mix threes, and then when I do the potentiation part of my training, of my warm-up, incorporating the twisting planks or just a round the clock or a 360 plank. So all those kind of core stability and strengthening exercises, they take so little time, and they are so important to, again, to reinforce the core, to prevent injuries, to create a healthier athlete. And then it's, again, Stuart McGill. I should invite him to be on one of these podcasts.
Oh, I definitely would listen. Well, very nice. So now the last key point that I note here, it's balance. And I put like in the same point, balance, proprioception, deceleration. And I know that are different stuff, but I will explain why I put in the same point. Because I do a progression that will pass to balance, perception, and in deceleration. That's why I put in the same. I know that are different stuff, balance, perception, and deceleration, but I put in the same topic because they will help, of course, in the balance during the chopping leg, but I usually do a progression here. And first of all, when we think in balance and proprioception, people always think in unstable exercise, and I use it, okay? But that's if you minimize, like, oh, the only way to work with proprioception and balance is in unstable environment, I think you are... you could do more stuff, you know. You are,
yes, you are a little bit limited if you only think about unstable platforms, and you forget the vestibular systems and changing of directions. And of course, when you mention deceleration, we're not talking about braking force, we're talking about changing of directions. And also, yes, of course, I understand what you mean, and I am actually visualizing some of the exercises in my mind as you talk. And I hope probably we have to do a video, a YouTube edition of this episode one day to come up with, to show some of the exercises. But yes, I understand why you mean with balance and proprioceptive exercises being in one way, but adding deceleration also to it. Yes.
Yeah. And like, for example, I always like to start with exercise with closed eyes. So imagine, for example, I just lift my knee up front and then close the eyes. Mm-hmm. It's a quite simple exercise, but we start to work the proprioceptive capacity of the athlete. Because when you talk about proprioception, we are talking about this involuntary adjustment of your body, of your position. And one of the main feedbacks that we have to keep our balance and to stabilize it's the vision. And when we close the eyes, we don't have this visual feedback. Yes. And then all we have is like our proprioception and our capacity of understand where is our body, you know? And
it's important. It's important to understand. Most people probably don't understand what we're talking about. Proprioception is the ability for your body to recognize the position of your body, of your joints, as an all. It can be as simple as how to understand how your body understands when you're walking barefoot or even with your shoes, if there is an inclination on the floor, on the terrain. Are you standing straight? Are you not standing straight? Is the proprioceptive also allow your brain to understand is my arm stretched or bended? Is my knee straight or bended? So the proprioception is the understanding of the position of our body and our in related to a floor or to a position on the ground, but also in between our muscles and the joints, in which position are they open or stretched and closed. That's proprioception. So the most of the basic proprioceptive feedback is actually to our brain is overtaken when we see it, because if looking at something and we know how it is, and then looking at the floor, looking at my arm, I know how my arm is bended or stretched. And if we have closed eyes, we have to focus on basically our proprioceptors to identify the positioning.
Yeah, perfect. And then we, in this sense, we can do a progression, as we say all the episodes. So we start with lift your knee up front, for example. Then you can stay, another progression would be you staying, for example, in a yopchagi position with your knee bent, for example. Then another progression, when the athlete's okay, he's balanced already, you do as a partner. One guy standing in a yopchagi position with the eyes closed, and the other one can sometimes touch like the shoulder, the leg, and create a little stability. It's not, for example, it's important that the partner has a good understanding of the ability. It's the idea is not to push like the
like athlete, like the kids do.
Yeah, yeah. The idea is to create some instability, where the athlete must reposition himself with his eyes closed, talking. And if you see someone doing it, it seems quite easy. But in general, when we came to this exercise, the athlete has some difficulty. And I think it's a very nice way to work, to stimulate the proprioception in a specific movement. For example, you stay in a position that's a position that the athletes will use a lot during the fight, and then you work the proprioception in this sense. And then after working with proprioception with eyes closed, then I use to work balance in unstable platform like Ozu or this kind of stuff. And then we can use different exercise. General, as I said, of your knee lifting your knee up front, or in a yopchagi position, or even kicking. You can like holding pedals with the guy in a bozu, in an unstable platform, and then you can hold some kicks. And even, for example, as we were saying, chalking, like that's the main point. You can do a chalking in a, of course, that's a very advanced. I wouldn't suggest starting with this exercise. But if you have like an advantage, you could chalking leg in a nice unstable platform. But you can create like many possibilities in this unstable platform. And then the last part of the progression, I like to use deceleration exercise. And what this, I talk with this deceleration, what we think in deceleration is we are thinking in this capacity of absorb the force. So, for example, to change direction or to decelerate a jump. For example, when I jump, when I go down, I need to decelerate. And this ability of absorb this impact is quite important for your leg that's in the base. When the guy came kicking you, and then you must chop in the leg, like you are having on your base leg, have like your body weight and some body part of body weight of your opponent, you know. So you have a lot of strength. And the guys usually do the kick as strong as he can. So if you don't have a good capacity of absorbing that impact with your base leg, like the probability with the time that you increase your risk of injury or something like this. So and in this sense, we have like many exercise, progression of exercise that you start like with simple exercise of, for example, I jump and then decelerate with two legs and then with one leg. And then, for example, I can jump in a sideways and stay stable in just one leg, for example. We can do like these general progressions, for example, that I like this kind of deceleration, of lateral deceleration in just one leg and then stabilize. But we can do some specific progressions too. So imagine, for example, I'm in a yopchagi position, and then my partner like pushes
your feet.
Push my feet, for example, or I need like to jump back and then stabilize. So I like to use this partner exercise, where the partner like create this kind of instability and force the athlete to decelerate and go forward or backward and then stabilize the position. Then you stimulate your base leg to absorb this impact and stabilize, you know. So, but I would not start with this kind of exercise. I would start with general exercise where you can decelerate and stabilize in a more simple positions. But I think this is quite important for chopping legs, for taekwondo in general, but as the topic here was chopping legs. So these are the 5 points and how I usually do the progression of each one of these points. I don't know what you think about this last point, this last topic.
Definitely very clear and good examples. Start with front and lateral bounds so that you're landing in one leg. Work on the deceleration with the general exercises and then move on to the progressions. Also in terms of proprioceptive exercises, making sure that the vestibular system is also there, eyes closed, changing the position of your neck, and all these kind of situations will increase the difficulty of the drills. Moving on to sport specific with opponents and with the against an opponent, again against a force in a different direction that forces you to decelerate. Those are very good exercises. Pretty sure you have someone on your Instagram. If not, go and post them.
okay, post it.
So let people copy the good ones and understand what are the good drills outside. And thank you very much for being here, Diego. Anything else you want to share with us?
Oh, no, I think it's this. And I would like to invite everyone to follow my Instagram. It's Diego_Souto_Morini. I always post exercise or content about not just taekwondo strength training, but for combat sports, physical training in general. So people who want to follow me, it's invited.
Yes, thank you, Diego. We will link you on the on the podcast episode as usual. It's the third episode that we have you, and it's always a pleasure. And we'll make sure that we link your as we always do, and so people can follow you and learn a little bit more from you. I'm pretty sure we also have you in a few episodes. We have so many more techniques and many more strength and conditioning tips that you can share with us. And it was not a short one. It was actually quite a long podcast, and I'm happy that you are here with us.
Well, thank you very much. And as I said in the beginning, I always feel very honored to be here. And well, I feel very happy. And for me, it's a pleasure talking about Taekwondo. For me, it's a pleasure. And well, I like to talk with you specifically. You're an intelligent person, and I like to talk with intelligent people. So thank you very much. Whenever you want me to come back, I definitely will come back.
Thank you, Diego. We always have great feedback from your episodes. The last one was very nice. The first one, awesome. And this one is definitely a lot of tools and a lot of tips for everyone who is training. So yes, we'll talk again soon. There are so many more topics about strength and conditioning for Taekwondo that needs to be discussed. And you are the reference, and not only in Brazil, but you've been also teaching internationally. And it's always nice to listen to you.
Thank you very much.
Diego, it was a pleasure being here with you and with everyone who is listening. This was the Taekwondo Podcast. If you haven't already, listen to our other episodes that are available wherever you listen to our podcasts. We are releasing new episodes every Tuesday. Stay tuned, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a positive review, and share it with your friends. See you next time.
You've been listening to the Taekwondo Podcast, keeping the fans, coaches, and high-performance athletes up to date with the latest news and trends on Olympic Taekwondo. Your host, Coach Cesar Valentim, has almost 20 years of experience with high-performance Taekwondo and has worked all around the world as a Taekwondo trainer. We hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on Instagram at Taekwondo Podcast, on Facebook at Taekwondo Cast, and the website taekwondopodcast.com. See you next time.